Curious how many of you remember the day that your parents set you down, said it was time for an important conversation. You have lived in our house for 12 to maybe 15 years, and we think it's time for you to know who we are. I am your father, and this is your mother. And we're the ones that are responsible for having brought you into this world. You think about that, and you think that's a rather absurd question. We didn't have that kind of conversation. In fact, maybe I'd ask you to think back and try to remember, when was the earliest time? When the earliest memory of your life at which you realized, oh, this is my mother, this is my father. Again, probably, that seems a rather absurd question to us. We don't really remember when that concept necessarily just clicked within our minds. We don't necessarily remember being introduced, as it were, to our parents. They just were. Now, that concept built over time. We began, even as young infants, probably, to begin to realize some recognition. Oh, this is the one that has provided for me. This is the one in whom I find safety. This is the one that cares for me. This is the one that's going to help when I have a problem. And maybe that concept to some degree or form begins to form. And along the way, we begin to form attachment with the concept, maybe even beginning to form the word of mama or daddy or dada. And so those concepts begin forming, but there was no formal introduction, as it were. Perhaps, in many ways, I might think about Genesis 1 and verse 1 in that regards. In the beginning, God. It's sometimes interesting to think about. If you were to write of the history of the world, or if you were to write of things that were done, how would you choose to go about it? And we think, well, it's interesting. You know, God doesn't really set forth in many ways a logical explanation of who he is. He doesn't set forth an introduction. It is a very matter-of-fact blast on the scene. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. But I think it's important for us to remember part of the reason why is because God is not having to introduce himself to a strange people. And he's not having to introduce himself as a stranger to those people. God, through the pen of Moses, is speaking to a people that already know him, that trust in him, that rely on him. Now, in many ways, they're going to come to learn more about him. They're going to come, certainly, to know more about his will. I don't know everything that they knew before that point. There was probably some of this they had a concept of. There was some of this that they knew something of because of the oral histories that had been passed down, or even because of God speaking to the families through the fathers and having them pass his will along through in the patriarchal period. There was probably some knowledge of these things, but here's a setting forth in a little more logical order that God is doing at this point. But my point is, when you turn to Genesis 1 and verse 1, this is not God's introduction to these people. This really is, you know me as your God. And let me tell you more. He is about to form a closer relationship with these people. Because we stop and we think about our timing here. Moses is writing this during the time period here of the Exodus. Probably we can roughly place that about 1440 BC. And so we're dealing in a time period, I'll give some latitude, but 2,500-ish, maybe up to 4,500 years after the time that these events actually took place. And so you have the creation, but now Moses is writing about it by inspiration, putting it down as a historical account, telling the people of a history that man did not experience and could not have any knowledge of apart from God revealing it, at least Genesis 1 and 2. I wasn't there when God spoke and said, "Let there be light." I couldn't observe it. No other man could observe it. It wasn't filmed. Nobody sat back and took a picture of it. They didn't post a reel on any kind of social media site. What I know about the creation is going to be revealed to me by God, the one who was there, the one who did create all of these things. I love God's challenge to Job. In Job chapter 38, when it's kind of time, okay, you've gone around, but let God have his say. And it's particularly in Job 38 and verse 4, there's a challenge to Job in which God is going to say, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Declare if you have understanding." How did God do it? What were all the means and principles and everything that he used in the creation? Who did he seek as his advisor? Wasn't Job. Wasn't me. Wasn't any man, any human. God spoke. And it was so. He brought forth everything that we have and enjoyed. And so there is that reminder to us. When we go to Genesis 1:1, here is something of which we have no knowledge. God has to reveal this to us as to what happened or how this came about. And Genesis 1 is his record that he's giving us. And in many ways, it's a... going to use the same word I used Sunday morning, but it's a very sterile account. Not a whole lot of detail. There's not a whole lot of explanation. It just is. I spoke, this is what I said, this is what occurred. And there's not a lot of scientific details. There's not novels written. There's not textbooks that are that thick concerning all of the principles that are put into place and everything that God did and accomplished on these 6 days. God said, and it was so. And we're introduced to him there in Genesis 1:1 as the one who did all of these things. I'm going to propose to you at least a possibility. When you think about the time in which God is having Moses to write this historical record, that there's a point and a reason. We talk about Moses and we talk about the Exodus and we talk about it being about 1440 years BC before Christ. And here God is fulfilling even more of the promises that he had made to Abraham back in Genesis 12. And he's going to bring now this family that has gone down into Egypt, he's going to bring them out as a nation. And he's going to form a theocratic nation, God-centered. God is both your theology and the things that you worship and the order and the structure that's there, but he's forming their government. He's forming their very society and how they live and all of their legal laws and rules too that they are to follow. And he's going to bring them up and he's going to give them the land of Canaan that he had long ago promised to Abraham and to his family. And so I think it's significant in the sense of God is saying, I'm calling you forth as my people. I'm the one that you've waited for and longed for. I'm the one you've called out to during the back-breaking labor that were revealed or we have written about in the book of Exodus. You've called out to me and I'm delivering you. And I'm going to help provide you with a firm foundation of faith as to why you should follow me. And so I'm going to reveal myself. I'm going to reveal facts and some details about me. And part of that is creation. Who's the one that's able to speak? Who's the one that's able to bring these things about? God. Because he spoke. And it was so. And now the very creator of the world is calling upon you. Come and follow me. Walk according to my ways. Is it natural that even though they knew something of God, that maybe they need a little more foundation upon which to build their faith? And so God is giving them those details by providing them this history that begins in Genesis 1 and it's going to trace up through the very time into which they are now living. Why should you follow me? And I find that interesting when you think about things such as maybe Romans 10 and verse 17. Perhaps a memory verse that we've submitted to our memory that faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. If I want to have faith in the God of the creation, what do I have to have? I have to have knowledge of the creation. I don't know how it happened. I didn't see it. I didn't witness it. There's nobody else that I can go to and ask. Not even Royce. We could ask him about the ark, maybe, but not. No, there was only eight, and it wasn't Royce. But God can tell me. And the one that created these things, now I can believe in him as the creator. I can understand the things that he did by his power and have all the more faith and confidence in him. Who's able? God, don't you know the forces we're going up to? There are strong cities in the land of Canaan. But who am I following? I'm following the creator of all the universe, the creator of all that is. And so God is revealing himself to me. You've heard of me. You've had some trust in me. But I want you to know that you can have the confidence in the one that's brought you out of Egypt to follow him. Think about that in terms of Hebrews 11. We talked about that, I think, maybe last week or the week before. We've talked about Hebrews 11. But the idea that even the Hebrew writer opens there in Hebrews 11... in verse 1, as he talks about faith, and he says, faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. It is a reminder to us, faith. How do you think about faith? It's never been a blind leap in the dark. It's never been just a wishful thinking. Maybe there's a God. Maybe there's a creator. Maybe this is what he wants me to do with my life. No, faith is the evidence of, the substance of things not seen. The very thing that's going to stand under and provide a firm foundation for my faith that it can have confidence because of the evidence that even of the things that I can't see and witness, I can have knowledge and trust in. And then you begin reading through that chapter, and he talks about men and women that lived even beginning shortly after this time period of Genesis 1 that heard what God had to say, that listened to him, and that followed him. And time and again, they say that's what faith is. faith acted. And so it's not a study of Hebrews 11, but I encourage you to read through there and pay close attention that every time you see faith, you're seeing faith active, and there's an active verb closely associated with that faith. They acted on what God told them. They acted upon what God said. And I suggest to you and propose to you that when we go to Genesis 1 and we read about the creation, don't look and think, well, those are neat little children's stories that we talk about the days of creation. No, it's a reminder to us, we serve the God that created all of these things. And we serve a God that there is the evidence, because he was able to speak and bring these things about. Guess what? I'm still going to listen to his word today. And so I think about Paul and a favorite verse in Acts chapter 27 and verse 25. And a statement that he makes, you're on a ship that's facing a storm, and if you're on a airplane and it shakes a little bit, I'm scared. It's probably going down. You take a seasoned pilot, it's just a little bit of turbulence. Nothing's wrong. You lose 10,000 feet. He says, oh, no problem. Don't worry about it. You have seasoned mariners in Acts 27 that are afraid of their lives. This isn't just a little breeze that came up on the sea. This is a storm that they think they're about to lose their life. And Paul is able to speak to them in Acts 27 and verse 25, and he says, wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer. I believe God that it shall be even as it was told me. God says it's going to be okay. God said we're not going to lose life. You know what? I believe him. A stronger statement than I believe in God. Yes, he trusted God. He believed in the existence of God. He said, no, I believe God. That the things that he said, they will be so. And so that's the first thing I want us to remember. When we look at Genesis 1, or you look at Genesis 1:1, and you read about God, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. What do we have before us? We have a historical account. This is God's record of the things that he did and of the things that he was able to accomplish. I'll throw out two quickly, Matthew 19, verse 4 and 5. When Jesus is talking about marriage, he goes back to the beginning in which God created man and woman, in the beginning. And he speaks about marriage that's established here in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 27. And we're given further details on it, even in chapter 2. But he goes back here and he points to this. This is a historical account. And Jesus gives his testimony to the fact that this is the beginning, and that is where God created marriage, and that is where God created man and woman, particularly they're identified male and female in Matthew 19 and verse 4. But even if you consider Paul's writings in 1 Timothy 2 and verse 13, for Adam was first formed, then Eve. Paul looks back and he says, there's your historical account. It's not a fairy tale. It's not a fable. It's not just some wishful thinking or some crutch of an idea that man created to try to explain why we're here. Now, there's a historical account as we go into Genesis chapter 1. And because I can trust in what God said, even concerning the creation, I can trust in the word that he's going to give us in the remaining pages of that word. Historical account. I want to suggest to you, number two, when we look at Genesis chapter 1, I hope we never forget that it's showing us the power of God. I asked you to consider a moment in which your parents revealed themselves to you as their parents. Well, this is that's the concept there. The Israelites at that time, they knew of God. They'd always kind of known and appreciated him as God. He's not revealing themselves to him in terms of, let me tell you who I am. He's revealing himself in the sense of, here's what I've done. And that's what we begin to see even more as you consider Genesis chapter 1. As a finite mortal being, I have a hard time considering nothing. Sometimes, oh, we think it's easy. It's hard to think of nothing. In the same time, it's hard to think of infinity or eternity. We have concepts for them. We can even express them mathematically, but to really wrap our heads around that, I can remember struggling with the concept of eternity. I'm gonna live in heaven forever. I have a hard time wrapping my head around that. And there was probably a time as a younger person that scared me. It wasn't a joy to think about living forever. But what's the problem? Our concept of existence and our concept of life is framed in this life. If I had to live in this life forever, I don't think that's a joy or benefit. In many ways, our aging and the problems of this life give us all the more reason to look forward to an eternity in which now we have a body and existence that's not decaying and it's not wearing away and it's not growing old. But we have a hard time thinking about eternity. But we have this hard time thinking about nothingness in which nothing of this physical world existed. And yet when you open your Bible into Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, we're opening into that realm of nothing. Nothing in terms of no physical universe. Nothing in terms of no concept of space. And nothing in terms of no concept of time. God is bringing all of that into existence by the power of His Word. He merely speaks, and all of those things are so. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And in that very statement, we have God setting forth a concept of time. The beginning. It's when it all started. Time being a concept of this realm, time being part of that which God is creating. We have God creating the heavens, the space. And we have God creating the earth, the concept even of any kind of matter that is being brought forth. You see, we might think about bringing forth something from nothing. But what do? Well, I'm going to go get some clay from outside. I'm going to get some water, and we're going to mix it together, and we're going to fashion. No. Go get your own water. Go get your own clay. Well, okay, if I can get some sand. No. Can't use anything God created. What can you bring forth? That is the beauty of Genesis chapter 1. God brought forth from nothing. He didn't repurpose materials that were already there. He didn't reuse something else that somebody else had done. He spoke and these things were so. He brought these things into existence. And so we get to see the power of His creation. And it's a chapter that's all about God as you consider the 31 verses, and He is named there some 32 times. And so I propose to you, chapter 1 of the book of Genesis, it's not about the physical world and this universe. It's not about the material things of this life. It's about the God who made them. It's about the God who brought this forth. And so when you consider Genesis 1, we're getting to see divine sovereignty. Who did God ask permission? I'm thankful that I live out in the county, but I still can't do exactly everything I want to do. I remember the building process to try to get a radio station built next door here. That was about like pulling teeth to get the city of San Angelo to put a stamp onto anything. God didn't have to ask anybody permission. He didn't have to submit His plans or His blueprints. He was sovereign. God is able to do as He wishes. You get to see this great divine power. He's the one that's able to speak, and all of these things were so. We read a moment ago, Psalm 33 and verse 6, by the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the host of them with the breath of His mouth. To be able to speak and things just come into existence, that's the power of God that is shown in this creation. But beyond that, I suggest to you, you see infinite wisdom as well as knowledge. Science will study now and tell you, okay, the Earth's axis has to be at this certain degree. If it's tilted even slightly, it's either going to burn up or it's going to be too cold and everything's not going to work. You have to have this distance or else the gravity from the sun is going to pull you in. Things have to be traveling at this speed. God got it right. He spoke and it was so. And all of these things brought forth in their perfection. And so he's showing us his knowledge, his wisdom. He's showing us his grace and his love and providing all of these things that he has given for us. And again, as you read there, I suggest to you, God's doing all of these great things, and we have these brief statements. God said, "Let there be light," and it was so. Science will never exhaust the study of light and the travelings thereof, or sound and their waves, and all of these things we continue to learn more about, yet we have these brief statements. I've always been a great fan of Genesis 1 and verse 16, and he made the stars also. Seems like almost no disrespect, an afterthought. He can, the one who can make the sun and the moon and the lights, he can make the stars, just throw them out there. And yet we marvel as we look at the stars and consider how did all of these things come about, and we're still figuring things out concerning it. And he simply is setting forth a record. Here's what I did. You see those things that you get to see glimmering in the night? I made those. Not with arrogance, but he's telling us that's who I am. I am the God who created. I see I took after Dietrich. Psalm 19:1, Romans 1, two particularly favorite verses there we've looked at before, but Psalm 19:1, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. The psalmist is reminding us, as we look at the things that God created, they scream out to us, there is a God and there is a creator. If you continue reading in that chapter, in verse 3, there is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. He's looking at these things and he's saying, this is a universal language. Everybody can know that there is a God, that there is a creator, by looking at the things that he's done. He has left us the evidence. That's what the psalmist is crying out and screaming to us that we can understand. Mention Romans chapter 1. You can look in about verse 18 down through about verse 23, but focus on verse 20 as Paul is reminding them. Here you have the Gentiles that turned away from their knowledge of God, and that's on them because they had every proof and they had every evidence that there is a God and that there is a creator, because the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. I don't see God. I see the effect of God. I see the things that God did. I see the things that he created, and they remind me there is a God in heaven. No man made these things. These things are not mere accident. Rather, this is the power of God that he spoke, and these things were so. Finally, and I'll take a quick break. Number three, let Genesis 1 remind us of the awe of God. The awe, the appreciation, the wonder. We read Psalm 33 again, and look at verse 8 and 9. Let the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. Why? Because he spake and it was done. He commanded and it stood fast. God did all of these things. I knew we didn't have time. Wasn't going to try to delve into some great scientific thought or look at what you can go in places such as Apologetics Press or other places where you can look and study creation evidences, and you can look to geology and the structure of the earth, and you can look to archaeology and see the factual accuracy of the Bible. You can look at microscopic evidences. You can look at macroscopic evidences as you look at the universe and see there's an intelligent design behind all of these things. And when you read Genesis 1, that's what I want you to remember. Those details of that scientific design aren't given to us there. But what I want us to remember is when you see that wonder and when you see that design, remember, that's the God that just spoke and it was so. And so we can cast our gaze into the far reaches of our galaxy or into the far reaches of the universe and understand and even quantify some of the forces and the laws that keep our universe running and be amazed at that design and that intricacy. But we can also take the microscope and we can zoom in and we can see the fine details of the cells of life and how they operate. And we understand the operation of those things more and more. It's amazing the things that we can do, and it's amazing the things that we see and observe and even have some understanding of being able to explain them. But my point is, just because we can explain something doesn't mean we could do it or repeat it. And it doesn't mean that it's any less, allow me the word, magical. I don't want to use that in terms of God, but it's still awe-inspiring. God did these things. That intricacy that you see, that doesn't dismiss my knowledge of God. That makes me appreciate God all the more because of the things that He did. It makes me stand in awe of His creation all the more. And so we can appreciate those things. We read Psalm 139. The psalmist looks, he didn't even have the sonogram and the things that we did. He said, but I know that I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. I stand in awe of the things that God did. And so the psalmist, again, Psalm 8, that was read. He said, oh, look at all these wonderful things. And what does he do? He opens and he closes. Oh, Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth. What a magnificent God that created all of these things. I hope there is a wonder and an awe. I hope there is an appreciation of the power of God. And I hope that we remember that is God beginning to reveal himself to us in a historical account. This is what I've done. And because knowing that, I have the faith and the confidence to follow him as the creator of all of the world. And so we're going to hit pause there for just a moment. And let Luke come lead us in a song, and we'll be back for a brief invitation.